recording.
Okay. Okay, so we are now on section number 3, informal interviews for deliberation and action. Item number 1, 2347, in regards to Kimberly Young, DVM. This is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Kimberly Young in case number 2347. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 32-2234. Dr. Young, please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kimberly Young.
And okay. David Stoll, serving as legal counsel for Dr. Young.
Okay. Dr. Young, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you have submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
We do have additional materials that Tracy is circulating right now. It's basically a summary of medical records for the pet owners, two pets. One of the issues in this case is whether or not Serenia was offered and declined by the owners. And the medical history reports that we've submitted are for the two pets, which show that on 5 different occasions, Serenia was offered by the practice and declined by the owner.
Okay, thank you. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Okay, Dr. Nosley, would you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Yes, thank you. On June 29, 2022, Pablo, a 4-year-old male pug, was presented to the respondent for a dental procedure. The respondent examined the dog. The dog had a history of tracheal collapse and brachiocephalic syndrome with stenotic nares. Pre-surgical blood work was performed, an IV catheter was placed, the dog was pre-medicated and pre-oxygenated prior to induction. Once induced, the dog was intubated and anesthetic monitoring was placed. Monitoring equipment was placed. Ultrasonic scaler was started while initial readings were obtained. Within a couple of minutes, the technical staff noted fluid coming from the dog's nose and then alerted the respondent. The respondent evaluated the dog, turned off the anesthesia, and the dog started to wait, chewing on the endotracheal tube. The dog was extubated and placed on oxygen. The dog's breathing rate decreased, which required re-intubation. The dog's heart rate decreased, CPR was initiated. The dog did not respond successfully, and the complainant gave permission to cease it. CPR efforts. A necropsy was performed and revealed the dog likely passed away due to gastric aspiration with subsequent respiratory failure.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Nosley. Dr. Young, at this time, I would now like to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Okay. Dr. Young, we would now like to give you an opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
Before Dr. Young gives her substantive response to the summary, I just wanted to let the board know that in addition to Dr. Young, we have two witnesses here today that will address the concerns the board expressed during your review of the investigating committee's report. First, with regard to the emotional aspect of this case, the manner in which the necropsy report was sent to the owner, we have Dr. Ann Fleschner. Dr. Fleschner will corroborate Dr. Young's testimony that she was not involved in any way in responding to the owner's request for a copy of her necropsy. Dr. Fleschner will also testify that before the owner opened the necropsy report that was emailed to her, she contacted the owner and cautioned the owner not to open it, that it contained graphic materials that may be upsetting, and offered that the practice would provide a redacted copy of the necropsy report. Apparently the owner didn't listen to Dr. Fleschner and opened the report anyway. As was pointed out by Ms. Frost in April, the practice could not withhold the report. That would be a violation of R311-5018. They had to provide a copy of the report when the owner was demanding it. And unfortunately, the staff member initially sent it without it being redacted. Again, when Dr. Fleschner found out what had happened, she personally contacted the owner and told her not to open it. In any event, given the circumstances surrounding how the report was provided and how the owner was warned, there's no factual basis for any type of violation against Dr. Young, as she was not involved in any way in this aspect of the case. The other witness we have for you today is a technician, Brooke Joe. She's already submitted a statement to you that you have in your materials, but at the time she prepared her statement, the Serenia issue wasn't of concern. So she's here today and will testify that she specifically offered Serenia to the owner on June 29th, 2022, and that it was declined. This is consistent with a prior dental procedure that was performed almost a year to the day before in 2021, where a Serenia was again offered and declined by the owner. And in the materials that we've submitted to you just now, it evidences that on five times this owner was offered Serenia for two pets, and it was declined on each occasion. With that, I'll let Dr. Young respond to the summary.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you. During the review hearing in April, which much was said about that, circumstances surrounding the way in which that necropsy report was provided to the owner, I want you to know that I completely understand how upsetting that was for the owner, but I had nothing whatsoever to do with that aspect of the case. If I had been involved in that, I would have personally cautioned the owner about the sensitive nature of the report and offered to redact it or send a summary report to the owners. Legally, I understand that the practice was under an obligation to provide a copy of the necropsy report because it was requested. In fact, the owner actually demanded a copy, and it therefore could not be withheld. But as I stated previously, I wasn't involved in how the practice responded to the request for the report nor the manner in which it was delivered. It was my understanding that after the owner called and demanded the copy of the necropsy report, a receptionist who's no longer with the practice emailed her a copy. With me today is Dr. Fleschner, who will testify that when she was made aware that the necropsy report had been requested and sent without anyone's knowledge, she personally called the owner and asked if the email and the report had been opened and read. The owner said no, so Dr. Fleschner cautioned the owner not to open it and said she would send a redacted copy without the pictures, which was sent. With regard to the medical management of this case, I know and fully appreciate the anatomical challenges associated with brachiocephalic canines, such as pugs, and the heightened risk for those breeds during routine anesthetic procedures. In this case, I was aware prior to Pablo's dental that he had prior tracheal collapse and brachiocephalic syndrome with stenotic nares. Also, if you look in the medical record, I specifically noted under tentative diagnosis, brachiocephalic syndrome. It was a factor in my risk assessment, and that is why I not only implemented the practice's brachiocephalic anesthetic protocols, but I also recommended that Pablo be given a pre-anesthetic Serenia injection. Unfortunately, the owner did decline this injection as they had on prior occasions with both pets. Clearly, this demonstrates that I assessed the risks associated with the anesthetic procedure for this dog and made a medically appropriate recommendation to minimize the risks, but unfortunately, the owner did not accept the recommendations. Similarly, as I stated in my response, I took additional precautions based upon assessment for the patient prior to starting anesthesia. After Pablo was pre-medicated, we waited approximately 30 minutes to allow medications to take effect. Prior to pre-oxygenation, we took another TPR and assessed anesthetic depth.
Then pursuant to the brachiocephalic protocols, Paula was placed on flow by oxygen for 5 minutes prior to propofol induction and intubation and then beginning of dental. My then assistant intubated Pablo using an appropriately sized endotracheal tube that was checked for leaks prior to placement. Unfortunately, complications did arise 2 minutes into the procedure and it was immediately stopped. I did inspect the mouth, checked to see where the tube was placed. I didn't see anything over, you know, whatsoever that would suggest that the tube had been inappropriately placed. Regarding the concern that there is no evidence that the place was tubed inappropriately, one of the committee members at the investigative committee did mention that tube placement may have potentially been done incorrectly. My understanding is that violations have to be supported by facts and evidence and not speculations and potentialities. As for the medical records concern, I admit there is conflicting information on the record regarding the Serenity injection that was offered and declined. The medical record template includes Serenia having been given by default. When the procedure is done and I review the record and finalize the record, medical record, I change and modify the default settings based on what was actually done. In this case, because of the tragic outcome, due to my emotional state as well as the staff and the clients, I simply forgot to go back and change that default setting prior to the end of the day. That reflected that Serenia had not been given. At most, this warrants a letter of concern. To clarify that issue, Brooke Jo is here today. She was the one who spoke with the client and offered the injection, and the owner declined it. Again, this is consistent with prior occasions when the Serenia had been offered and declined. Finally, as I indicated to you previously, since this incident, I have adopted new set of protocols, which mandates Serenia injections for all brachiocephalic patients. This is my policy. It's not required by Banfield or was required by Banfield at that time or by the Practice Act either. I'm now done and available for questions.
Okay, thank you. I would now like to ask the board members if they have any questions of Dr. Young.
Hi, Dr. Young. A general question about the records. Are you still with Banfield?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Pablo was seen on many occasions, about 12, somewhere around in there, ever since he was a puppy, mm-hmm. vaccinations. And one of the early visits was a minor upper respiratory issue, and at that time we see the appearance of the brachiocephalic syndrome. And I guess from then on it occurred in the record. And I'm assuming that was a master problem list. Is that kind of what it is?
Correct.
There's very little in the records addressing the upper respiratory system on all of these visits. Is there a time when that could be removed? Brachiocephalic syndrome, or does it, once it's there, it's there?
No, we can change that diagnosis. It would be in the history, mm-hmm. But it would be like a therapy declined or resolved or something like that.
Yeah. Because, of course, it's a very major factor in this case, mm-hmm. whether we have just stating brachiocephalic syndrome is present without some kind of a symptoms or diagnoses related to that. And there really wasn't any all along for years.
I had a conversation with her in the medical notes about sternotomy surgery and elongated soft palate surgery.
I did see that.
I told her I do the sternotomy surgeries, mm-hmm. I don't do the elongated soft palates, and I'd recommend going to a surgeon for that one.
Yeah.
And that came up after an ER visit that she had had, where they had also diagnosed her with bradycephalic kinship, coming from coughing at that point.
Oh, okay, so that was on ER, other visit?
Yes, there's been no recollection of other visits where we had concerns other than that original coughing one.
Okay, so it wasn't a second opinion, it was an emergency visit?
Yes, I think it was an emergency visit.
Okay. So we continued to have brachiocephalic syndrome, no resolution of that, and it, with very little addressing that. Can you also explain on the template for the examination, we have respiratory normal on all occasions, your visits as well as others. Is that respiratory normal refer to auscultation of the lungs?
Correct.
Or does it include upper respiratory?
It's auscultation of the lungs.
Okay.
Occasionally, there should be another area where we check for like tracheal collapse, mm-hmm. and we'll note if there's coughing elicited on the palpation.
Is that a cough on, okay, and that there is in the record at times referring to oral nasal, but not every time. So you can add things to that list.
Yeah, you can add and take away.
Okay, thank you for that. What does it mean in the record that the exam was certified by, and then a doctor's initial?
I've completed the physical exam.
Okay, so it means you've done that?
Yes.
Actual exam? And
yes.
Certification means I did that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to refer to the 1/30/19 visit, and you were the doctor of record on mm-hmm. that visit. Do you recall that one?
Possibly, if you look
okay.
at my memory, I can pull out the record.
Okay, that's fine. Pablo was about a year, a little over a year at that time, and your diagnosis was tracheal collapse. From what I could read, the exam was fairly unremarkable, normal respiration, stenotic nares ruled out, in, which was curious. Your diagnosis was tracheal collapse, mainly based on the history of pulling at the harness. So do you recall that visit?
Yes, I do recall it. Yes, I had spoken to the owner about it on the day of the dental, that it wasn't the pulling of the harness potentially could have been stronger. When I pressed on the trachea and tried to irritate it,
right.
No cough was elicited at that point.
I saw
it doesn't rule out
correct.
A tracheal collapse still.
Correct.
I think I might have put other rule outs as well for mm-hmm. possibilities, but because of history
maybe.
Of the pulling, then I did. I indicated to her that that was the likely cause.
Presumptive likely, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then that conversation with the owner following that you've already alluded to, mm-hmm. Without getting into it in detail, basically at that visit they concurred with your presumptive diagnosis of tracheal collapse. But there was a definite recommendation at that time to have surgery for some of the brachiocephalic issues in this dog. They said you should have nares done and you should have soft palate. Is that correct?
I don't, the record that I have from them mm-hmm. doesn't specifically state that
okay.
it was significant. I feel like they said something about the saccules as well, but I'm not 100% sure how they evaluated that, since it didn't describe in mm-hmm. their exam findings how mm-hmm. they evaluated the elongated soft palate.
Not to interrupt you, but I don't believe we have those records from that
I have a copy. Is this from McCormick Ranch Animal Hospital?
The emergency visit?
Sure. Thank you. That was when Pablo was a little over a year. Then I believe you saw Pablo three times total before the event occurred. And he had had two dentals, the first one an hour or so because they extracted.
Correct.
Premolar. And the second one, a very brief one, and I believe you were the doctor.
Correct.
The second one. Okay. So looking at the events of 6/29/22, that dental, where the event occurred, we have respiration normal. No listing of upper respiratory structures. In the record, there's a notation about an ECG with one word, bradycardic. Was one actually taken, or is that a reflection of the anesthetic?
That was a reflection of what happened.
What happened at this event.
Yeah.
Sure. So in regards to the preoperative evaluation of the patient and assigning in the system that I guess Banfield uses an ASA of 1, indicating a low risk, it's my understanding that could be different for different hospitals what scale they use, but at any rate, this was a low risk indicated in the record.
Yeah, and as I have explained to the owner as well, it was a low risk for the breed because the dog was otherwise healthy, for its breed. Blood work was perfectly normal, lung was sound and clear. We were at a decent weight. So that's why I did that. And it has been notated like that most of the record as well. Previous doctors had also done an ASA status of 1.
Would it be, so we have different, depending on the breed, there's a different scale.
Yeah, ASA status is, it's not a veterinarian thing.
Right.
I would think it's something flexible. I feel like one doctor would say one thing in person, another mm-hmm. doctor saying something else.
Sure.
It definitely wouldn't have changed anything that I did on this patient.
So this would also, the assigning the low risk would also include your knowledge of the history of the patient, including that visit. The tracheal collapse visit and other injuries.
Correct. With the history of that, we hadn't seen it back for any additional issues for that coughing, and it happened that one incident with us, and there was no indication of tracheal collapse on exam that day.
That day.
Right. Again, it's a subjective.
Sure. In regards to the induction, the record indicates that BJ, that is Ms. Jo, correct,
yes.
Administered 4.4 mLs of propofol, and then an additional 1 mL 7 minutes later. I'm assuming that additional was post-intubation, 7 minutes. It didn't take 7 minutes to intubate.
They do propofol slowly, usually not that slowly. Yes, it was. We were probably a little light. I think the original heart rate was 200, if I remember correctly. So we were probably a little bit light. We gave a little bit additional propofol
after intubation. Okay. Who calculates the dose?
I
propofol.
Do.
And who draws it up?
My assistant does.
On your orders?
Yes.
Okay. And who decided to administer the additional?
I'm always told what the heart rate is, or we're panting. So I always tell them to give an additional certain amount of medication. They don't give it on their own.
Right. So that leads into my next question. Where were you physically at this time?
The way our dental sink is set up, it's a double sink. So I was literally on the other side of that other sink.
Okay. And is that the normal practice, that the induction is done by the tech?
Correct, with us standing.
Okay. Is Ms. Cho a CVT?
No.
Okay. Hypothetically, if the patient was determined to have a higher risk, what would change in that induction? Or if anything?
If the patient was a higher risk, for instance, if there was blood work abnormalities or anything like that, I would have I would call the owner first and have another conversation. I have indicated to people that I don't think that a dental would be warranted due to age or due to, a significant blood work change. And I leave it up to the owner at that point to make that decision. The owners sign authorization forms when they come in with the indication of that there can be complications with surgery and anesthetic procedures.
So you might cancel it, but how about changing the procedure at that time? If you say, well, I'm not going to cancel this, but I've got a risk here, might then you not do the propofol administration?
I'm always there if there's any issues with the intubation, and then
induction right now.
So if there's complications with the intubation, I am there to help out if needed.
Okay.
And we've had dental procedures in the past, and I don't remember if Brooke was the one who actually did last year's dental, but
I believe it was TM.
That would be Tasha. She is with a different practice right now.
Okay. So regarding the intubation, we've already said that is done by the technician. And did you supervise or observe when this was taking place? Were you in the location that you just described?
Yes, I was.
Maybe?
Okay. Maybe 2 feet away.
Okay. In the information we have from Brooke Jo, and she's here, maybe she can answer. I didn't quite understand. Place ET tube with no retraction. Is that common parlance for you? I don't know what no retraction means.
I don't know what no retraction means.
Okay,
I'm assuming what she meant was that you place the ET tube without any complications.
Okay.
Or resistance.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And how is the ET tube placement checked by the technicians?
They listen for a cough. Sometimes the cough's there, sometimes it's not. They check to feel if they can feel breaths in the tube itself. Once the tube is tied into place and they are placed on oxygen, breaths are given to make sure that we can hear clear breath sounds on both sides, to make sure that it's not intubated too far down.
or would that include listening for noise?
Yeah.
When they give positive pressure ventilation?
Yes.
For leaks or for they,
yeah,
they helping can, with where the tube is in the place?
Yes, they can hear leaks or and wheezes or anything that's coming out of.
Okay, and that was done in this mm-hmm. case?
Correct.
Are there laryngoscopes available?
Yes.
Are the techs trained in their use?
Yes.
But it was not used in this case? By Ms. Gill?
Most likely not. I don't see her use them often. I think most of the time it's with cats.
Okay. And you were right there. So
I was right there.
You would
yeah.
see whether she used it or not. You don't think she did in this case?
No.
Okay. So the information states that after you were notified of the problem, the fluid coming from mm-hmm. the nose, and you were right there again, mm-hmm. you hadn't left, mm-hmm. so it was seconds.
Yeah, would that be pretty
correct?
Much.
Okay. Your statement says that you could not determine if the ET tube was properly placed because you couldn't see.
Because it was intubated, I cleaned out the area because mm-hmm. I did see a little bit of fluid coming out of the nose. There was fluid in the mouth because they had just started the scaling, so from the water spray. So I washed it and I tried to look, and I didn't use a laryngoscope. I made a decision at that point just to turn off the anesthesia and wake him up.
To wake him up at that point?
Yeah, because I was concerned about the fluid in the nose, and I wanted to get him off of the anesthesia, and I didn't want him to be sedated anymore.
Okay. So why did you decide to remove the tube and then use a mask?
He started flailing and waking up and chewing at it.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't keep it in any longer. I was afraid of him causing injury or even doing something to the tube, which would make things worse. Mm-hmm. So I removed the tube and I gave him some oxygen just to make sure he was still oxygenating well.
Did you deflate the cuff before you pulled it out?
Yes.
Okay. So then, after the mask was in place, your statement says that the patient was then breathing strongly. So how did you determine this? How did you determine that he was breathing strongly?
He was sternal. He was moving around. He was actually pretty bright and alert at that point, and he was taking big, deep breaths. He decompensated rather quickly after that.
After that?
Yeah.
So at that time, it was your assessment that the lungs were inflating normally
that
mask?
Correct.
By just chest movement?
Chest movement, the pinkness of his tongue when he had his mouth open. So I saw the pinkness of the tongue. I didn't even have chance to listen to the lungs because, like I said, we were decompensated quickly. The pinkness started to look paler, and then we started to look slightly blue, and that's when I decided to reintubate.
So do you recall if there was any material on the balloon tube?
There wasn't, because I ended up using the same tube.
That was my next question. Did you reuse the same tube?
I reused the same tube. It was right there, and so I ended up using the same tube.
Regarding the radiograph that was taken, I was a little confused, and then some of the discussions following cleared it up a little bit, but that radiograph on 6/29/22, when was that radiograph?
That was postmortem.
And how long postmortem?
Not that long postmortem. I would say maybe within an hour, but I can't be 100% sure.
The CPR and then the owner's visiting.
Yeah, after, like an hour after that whole
scenario. And then when was it sent to the radiologist?
I think it was several days later. We gave that option to the owners, and they wanted that done.
Okay. So we don't have that radiograph or the report. So who evaluated the trachea as hypoplastic? Was that in the report, or was that,
that was your notes? That was in the report.
Okay, but there was no other notations other than that. So when was that recorded in the record then? You would go back and...
I think with my conversation that I had once I got the result back from the radiologist, and I called the owner and I talked to them then.
And then you put it in the...
Yes.
Okay. In the radiology report, was there any description of a lung field, or was it just involving the trachea?
No, there was description of the heart and the lung field, but there wasn't, I'm sure I have it here. I thought we sent it to you guys.
I looked and looked. Did anybody see the report from the radiologist? No.
I think I sent it to the radiology report. I'm pretty sure that they notated, I know they notated an enlarged heart, and there were abnormalities in the heart with the knee props report. They didn't really notate anything necessarily about the lung field. They did note that it was a post-mortem radiograph, so.
Right. So you have looked at the necropsy report, of course. Do you refute anything in their report, the pathologist's findings in the necropsy? Is there anything that you would refute and say that?
Refute?
Yeah. I don't think that's true, because there is some subjective evaluation.
In the necropsy report, and I understand he diagnosed likely cause is, was it peri-anesthetic, gastric, but he couldn't necessarily state when that occurred.
Right.
So he wrote during pre-medication, we get pre-medicated, and then we had a 30-minute time frame in between before we brought him to the dental table. There's the consult.
On the radiograph?
Mm-hmm. And it's on the rest of it's on the back.
Trachea diameter narrow, but uniform. When do you think the aspiration that resulted in the respiratory failure occurred?
I don't know.
No,
I really don't.
Speculations. Okay, I have no more questions.
Okay. Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes, Ms.
I have some questions of Dr. Young, if I may. As a layperson, can you give examples of what would be an ASA 2 or a 3, or go on up the scale so that we could do a mental comparison?
Okay. I feel like I don't know if I'd ever want to do an ASA 3. Like ASA 2s, I put as older dogs, 13, 14, that we do that have normal blood work, heart condition dogs, dogs that have medical, actual medical conditions, like heart disease would be a significant one. Diabetes, Addison's, things that could cause major complications. Sometimes with those ASA ones, I'll have conversations with the owners about anesthetic procedures and either not doing them, if they're too old, or their heart condition is not well addressed or worsened.
Yes, when you say a heart condition, I know murmurs are rated.
Yeah.
Would you, what level of a heart murmur would you say puts
them? So
it's
not necessarily the murmur, it's more of kind of the heart size and the issues. Usually any dog that has a significant heart murmur, let's say like a 3 to a 6, I would need to have a minimum of x-rays or a cardiologist to evaluate it to make sure that we were healthy enough for an anesthetic procedure.
And generally, brachiocephalic dogs are generally, if everything else, with a history of tracheal collapse, are still in an ASA 1.
So again, ASA status is very subjective.
That's why I'm asking.
It is so very subjective. Tracheal collapse is not necessarily part of a brachiocephalic syndrome. Tracheal collapse can be on any dog. It can be on an older dog with degenerative cartilaginous rings. It could be on any dog in general.
And it can heal itself, from what I heard?
Tracheal collapse? No.
No. So although it wasn't noted afterwards in the following years that the dog was brought back, it was noted in what, year one? It was still there. It didn't go away.
It was never 100. You can't, it's a dynamic disease. You can only diagnose it if it's collapsed on x-ray. So you can make physical exam findings and make an assumption that you have a tracheal collapse, but you can never say that it is 100% sure without having a radiographic evidence that a tracheus collapsed.
Was that done initially when the first tracheal collapse was noted?
No, we discussed options, and we opted for some cough tablets because normally there's not much you can do for tracheal collapse. There are surgical corrections, but I don't think surgeons really recommend them.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I'm gonna jump in kind of after there. Can you walk me through kind of your I don't know, philosophy, guidelines on performing dentals? When you start them, how frequently you would necessarily?
For dental cleanings?
Yes.
It's dependent on the dog and the teeth.
Okay.
Obviously, some breeds have just bad genetics, and at 1 year old, you have Yorkies that have horrible dental tartar. So
okay.
I would recommend it in those situations just to maintain good oral health. There are definitely some dogs I find, larger breed dogs, like Labs or retrievers, but sometimes their teeth are really healthy, and I won't recommend dental cleanings until I start to see some deep, you know, tartar build up to that point.
Because my understanding is, I learned recently, obviously I'm not the vet on the board, that once you've done a dental on a pet, because you're scaling their teeth and taking the enamel off, then it is kind of imperative that you continue on a regular basis, annual or
generally, I usually, once you do a dental cleaning, I do recommend doing, you know, either some dogs who, again, have good dental health. I've seen dogs at 5 who have never had dental cleanings that have really good teeth. Sometimes I'll even recommend they go every other year.
Okay.
But if they come in every 6 months for evaluation, and we look at their mouth, and we look at their gums, and we look at the health of their oral cavity, and we make, you know, recommendations at that point. I'll have put in some medical records, recommend, you know, reevaluation for dental cleaning in 6 to 12 months, because tartar is very minimal at this point. So.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for board members?
I think I'm just going back real quick on the ASA. So for you, an ASA 1 would be a healthy dog?
Generally a healthy dog, or
yeah. So would you consider a brachiocephalic dog that has the brachiocephalic syndrome a healthy dog?
I personally haven't met many pugs that don't have that syndrome. So I work with, you know, the health of that breed and that dog. And again, it is subjective. It
didn't change anything that I would have done or didn't do with the procedure itself.
And when, like, if the dog had a comorbidity, might that change your protocol?
Potentially, if it was, like, obese.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in looking back at the record on this pet, what if it was obese, what would you change?
I mean, again, I wouldn't have changed anything that I would have potentially done medically. Mm-hmm. I might have changed to ASA2 status because we had a couple of things going on, and obesity, although it's very common in the breed, is not recommended.
Correct. And so in looking back on the record, you did say that this guy was a 3 out of 5, mm-hmm. which I know the Banfield score is a little bit different than others. But
that would be like a 7 out of 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but that then is
a good weight.
7 out of 9 is actually overweight.
Is it 7? Is it 5?
Or
five, the 1 out of 9?
4 to 5 is ideal, yeah. So when we have 7 out of 9, that's an overweight pet.
So seven. So I misunderstood. I don't use the 9 scale. I was always taught 9 for large animal and 5 for small animal at school. So I use the 3 out of 5. 3 is a normal, healthy pet. This dog had, I think, a history of being overweight, but had lost some weight.
Okay, so, and there might also be some issue as well, because according to this, the dog was 8.8 kgs when he visited and had his dental, which you considered a 3 out of 5. But previous visits, he was even less than that and was considered a 7 out of 9. And at one point, you had seen the dog the year previous, and it was 8.4 kgs, and you put above ideal. So just kind of looking at, again, that ASA status, how it may have changed. It may not have changed your medical protocol, but just, is that something that would have been relayed differently to the owner, the risk status of the pet going under anesthesia?
And if we were obese, you know, not just a couple of pounds overweight, then potentially I would have called and talked. I talked to them when there's additional risks, but the dog was otherwise healthy, like I said, and blood work was normal.
No other questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions from board members? Okay. You may step back. We'd actually, in speaking with Dr. Nosley, we're going to bring Dr. Fushner up next.